Good morning. In the interest of time, we're going to kind of keep this rolling at this point in time. First of all, good morning, and I'd like to start our meeting by asking for the committee's approval of the agenda and minutes. So at this point, are any modifications to the agenda? Okay. May I see a show of hands of the committee members? Okay, unanimous. Okay, so we've gotten that through. All right, now the approval of the minutes of April the 28th, 2016. May I have a motion to approve those minutes?
Moved.
Second?
Second.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. A couple of administrative items here. In order to try to move this along appropriately, I would like to, when Mr. Orr makes his presentation, I'd like to hold the questions until he completes his presentation, and then afterwards, I will turn to the various committee members. I'll allow you to ask your questions first, the members, and then thereafter the balance of the board members here. I hope that's agreeable to everyone so we can keep the program going here. Over the past 10 years, WMATA has had four detailed reviews of board governance, three from outside organizations, one from an external advisor engaged by the board. All of the reviews have made recommendations to improve the effectiveness of the board's governance. In response to these recommendations, the board has made some changes around the margins. The board has engaged yet another advisor, the Jones Day Law Firm, to conduct a thorough and comprehensive review of the board's governance. It has recommended significant changes to improve the effectiveness of the board. In light of these many challenges that Metro is facing and the intense public scrutiny of its operations, I believe that it's time for the board to take a bold step forward and adopt the changes recommended by Jones Day. The board should pursue a streamlined approach to governance as envisioned in the compact. One, our bylaws should be in line with modern best practices for organizations as large and complex as WMATA. The bylaws should provide a clear focus and comprehensive description of the role of the board, officers, and rules for taking action. Number two, we should bring the code of ethics of the board in line with the model that the board intended to have. Number three, we should improve our board orientation and inventory of governance documents so that new board members can very quickly understand how the board governance works and can ask questions and get appropriate responses. Board governance is fundamental to achieving WMATA's mission. Today, we've invited Kevin Orr from Jones Day to our meeting this morning. Kevin's here, to provide the committee with a more detailed overview of the proposed changes to the board's governance documents and structure. And at this point in time, I'll turn over to our general counsel, Patty Lee, to introduce Mr. Orr. I look forward to our discussions about moving this board forward. Patty, please.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to introduce Kevin Orr, who's a
Turn your mic on. I can't hear you.
It's my pleasure to introduce Kevin Orr, who's a partner at Jones Day, and his partner, Kathy Livingston, who has worked over the last several months and has completed a very thorough and thoughtful review of the board governance structure and the board governance documents, and he's here to discuss his recommendations. Kevin?
Thank you, Mrs. Lee, and Mr. Price, members of the board, thank you for inviting me here today to summarize where we are regarding governance structures. I see on the monitor is a representation of our review and recommendation of the governance, which has been posted on the website. What I would propose to do is just briefly go through that in the next 3 minutes to keep it short, then turn to sort of the substance of where we are. So if you turn to the second page, the scope of the review, why governance? Somewhat arcana. But governance has fundamental effect on the agency's authority's ability to operate. The scope of review included compact bylaws, inventory of board resolutions relative to governance, other governance reviews performed in the past year, studies of governance of transit agencies and associations, and meet with Strategic Advisor Task Force for feedback on possible changes. I would also note that in reviewing the bylaws, we took a fairly detailed and objective view of other variations of government bylaws, in particular, public transit authorities such as Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority, New York Metropolitan Transit Authority, MTA, Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Metropolitan Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, Dallas Area Rapid Transit Authority. In addition to being informed on our own professional experience in the private, public sector, and not-for-profit sector of governance documents for other agencies. In addition, we read third-party reports on governance and transit, including a report entitled Getting to the Root of It, the Role of Governance in Regional Transit by the Enos Center for Transportation. That report reviewed the governance structures of the following transit systems: Chicago Transit Authority, Massachusetts Bay Transit Authority, MBTA, Dallas-Fort Worth region, including Dallas Area Rapid Transit, Minneapolis-St. Paul, Metro Transit, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, MTA Port Authority, New Jersey Transit, and BART, Bay Area Transit District in San Francisco. What our overall conclusions that we found is there is a consistent approach to bylaws across the corporate world, both in the private sector, public sector, and nonprofit, and in particular in the realm of transit agencies. They give an efficient, high-level description of how governance works without necessarily going down into the detail. They are typically organized by subject matter with the same core subjects regularly covered, the board, its duties, board decision-making, board committees, officers, and mechanisms for amendment and ratification and the like. The current bylaws do not necessarily cover all the standard subjects. For instance, there's no section on officers and directors other than board officers and directors, if you go through the current bylaws. The current bylaws are organized a little atypically in terms of best practices and covering details beyond governance of WMATA as an organization is included. The draft proposed revised bylaws that we have submitted adopt an efficient and high-level approach covering the usual core subjects without necessarily going into a level of detail which is atypical. They do not change the authority of the board, its committees, or WMATA's officers. I want to be clear. There are no substantive changes proposed. There are no substantive changes in particular proposed to public access or operations in that regard. What they do attempt to do is to provide a straightforward description of WMATA's governance and group-related material together with a discussion together without the distraction of procedural details that can be left to lower-level documents. And the analogy I always use when talking about governance documents is your compact is your enabling legislation or your constitution. Your bylaws is the federal code. The rules and regulations are contained in the Code of Federal Regulations for those of your federal government experience or in your rules and policies, so on and so forth. Overall, what the bylaws attempt to do is to focus on two basic concepts: good faith in terms of their understanding and operations, and orthodox, consistent structures across other transit agencies, private and nonprofit agencies. So briefly returning to the next slide, we included in here a timeline of the governance review, essentially covering the past 6 years approximately. And since this is on the docket, suffice it to say there have been many governance reviews over time. One of our recommendations is that after this process, we hope that the proposal, as agreed to and perhaps revised through this discussion, is the last one needed for a consistent period of time. Next slide, please. Moving from review to action, same story, multiple reviews conducted about such challenges, jurisdictional veto, responsibility of alternates, clarity and roles and responsibility. There are a number of reports which are publicly available. Some of these issues, I'd like to point out, though, are not within the board's purview to change. Some of these issues are designed within the compact or constitutional original document, so the board can focus on its governance documents, but there are others that are overarching your responsibilities and abilities. Next slide, please. Recommendation number one, fairly straightforward, adopt the revised bylaws. This will not result in any dilution of board or officer authority. Reaffirm board's role as policy and oversight, general manager's role as the chief executive officer responsible for operations and administration. Clear focus, comprehensive descriptions of board, officers' roles, rules for taking, relationship with jurisdiction, official advisory bodies, application of the code of ethics, and the mechanism for amendments. Bylaws, the goal of the bylaws is that they're self-explanatory, so both board members as well as the public can read them and understand the structure for governance and mechanism for decision-making. Next slide, please. Changing the bylaws that are illustrative, for instance, add a list of WMATA's officers and description of roles. While the current documents speak to the board officers, they don't speak to the officers of the organization. Include provisions for board members regarding appointment, removal of terms, and self-explanatory changes to improve effectiveness. Next slide, please. Adopt a revised code of ethics. I won't belabor this, but it's self-explanatory in the documents. My understanding, the original intent was to try to track Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority. There are some changes that went over and above those tracks, which we are proposing in the documents. Next slide, please. Improve effectiveness of governance support function focuses on the role of the board secretary's office in conjunction with the general counsel's office to make sure that all documents are appropriately documented and made available to the public, but also provides a mechanism to ensure that proper levels of deliberative process and other privilege protections and protections for the board and the authority are provided. Next slide, please. Revisions to the compact are critical, but I'm not going to take that up here. It has been discussed many times in terms of what needs to be done, but given the overlay of the compact, these proposals are designed to fit within those restrictions. Final slide, please. Thank you, Mr. Price and members of the board. I am welcome to continue and go through the bylaws and a brief summary of where we're headed, or if you'd like and have had the opportunity to review, we can take it up in questions. I'm happy to proceed any matter you deem appropriate.
At this time, I think we'll start with questions from the committee members and then other board members. Who would like to go first? Tony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't really have a question. I have actually just a statement. I look at these kinds of governance discussions as actually improving organizational hygiene. I've been on the board for a couple of years and had sorted through our governance documents, and they were a mishmash of gory detailed procedures all the way to lofty statements about what the board did and does. And so I'm really supportive of the streamlining and really looking at best practices, so I welcome these changes.
Mr. Costa, if you don't mind, I think there's a saying, good artists copy, but great artists steal. Your phrase, organizational hygiene, I'm going to start using that.
So, Paul, perhaps you can give us another statement that's memorable.
Yes. I'll add my name to Tony's comments and say that, you know, these seem to be common sense revisions here, and I think it'll be a good, you know, first step as we move forward as a board and as an organization, and helping, you know, Mr. Wiedefeld with his efforts and making that distinction between what's our responsibility and what's his responsibility. So I think these are sensible recommendations moving forward.
Any other comments from the committee members? I'll open up to the other board members now, please. Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Price. And first of all, Kevin, thank you very much. I know you put a lot of hard work into this, and most of the members are pleased with the suggestions you've made, and hopefully we can move forward. When I was on the board last time, there was efforts to do just this, and I think some of the members who have been here for a while will reiterate that there was an attempt to do this in the past. We are there now, and so moving forward, I think, is very important. I do want to ask you a question about your last slide. And this is the one that talks about the board having dual responsibility of being a legislative board as well as a fiduciary board. And I wanted you to comment on this. And we had a discussion earlier in which you made some comments about the governance structure. And I think it goes to the fundamental problem that we have at this organization. Board members have a dual allegiance, allegiance to the jurisdiction that appointed them and allegiance to Metro, for which they sit on the board. And I think the comments earlier were this is a unique setup that you have not seen anything elsewhere in the country where people are found with a dual fiduciary responsibility. So I wondered if you could comment a little further on that and what your suggestions are going forward in dealing with that that issue that we have here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We, as well as other advisors in looking at the compact, have noticed that structurally in your compact, you're charged with competing fiduciary duties. You are, by design, charged with serving two masters. On the one hand, you have, you know, competing duty to serve your jurisdictions, to whom appoint you, but you also have a fiduciary obligation to the authority, to WMATA. Most organizations, certainly in the private sector, I would challenge anyone to go out and find a set of bylaws or other documents in the private sector that task a board member to have competing fiduciary duties. Under the Delaware Business Judgment Rule, as well as traditional business doctrine, the fiduciary obligation of a fiduciary, by definition, is to one principal party. That's why you are a fiduciary. It's very unique to see that there is a fiduciary that can have a dual obligation, which raises issues about dual responsibility and or concerns otherwise, legal concerns. So we find that structure quite unique in its design. I am not here to opine about the compact, but I did note it in our discussions that it puts an incredible burden on the board, that you have an obligation both to do what's in the best interest of a multi-billion dollar organization that moves 1.1 million people a day in and out of the city of Washington. A city the size of Dallas comes through here that has a high public responsibility component, that has a national security component. And you have competing duties in that regard. That is certainly something worthy of note to be taken up. It is unique to WMATA. We have not seen that in any other context.
Christian, does someone else? Let Tom go first, then you, Christian. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kevin, thanks for the report.
Yes, sir, Mr. Bolger.
I've read the document that you gave us at the last meeting, and I just had one clarification question. In your 60-day report that is at the end of this document,
yes,
there's a reference to, and I'm doing this personally as an alternate, mm-hmm. to abolish alternates.
Yes.
On page 7, elimination of the category of alternate directors. But in the document, in the tabs preceding, there's nothing in here about that.
Right.
So I'm asking for clarification.
Yeah. You'll see that in our 60-day report, which was normative, the recommendation was to adjust that. After some colloquy with the board, we do not propose that recommendation at this time.
Okay.
What we do in the bylaws is propose that we return back to the original intent of the compact and that alternate duties be specified and organized solely when the prime director or official director is not there. We do not suggest, for instance, that alternates cannot participate in committee meetings and cannot have voice. We do suggest that there is a procedure in the compact for when alternate vote and that be followed, as well as upgrading the opportunity. A companion upgrade proposal is that electronic means, for instance, for impaneling a quorum or for board participation. If for whatever reason someone's hiking in the Poconos, then the alternate would step into those shoes. But we tried to go back to the compact. So I will say to you, in a 60-day report, that was more normative. We have pulled back from that a little bit. It is more reasonable where it is now.
Kevin, first and foremost, you don't have to be a lawyer to read this. The compact acknowledges alternates. And so, you know, no one would ever talk about eliminating alternates because you have to revise the entire compact. And there's no support for that whatsoever. I'm sorry, Christian, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Price. I want to go back to the previous issue that Chairman Evans raised with regard to the governing model, and as you described it, Mr. Orr, serving
yes,
two masters. And while, of course, that's unprecedented in the corporate sector and having run several nonprofit organizations, it's obviously not a best practice. But I'm wondering to what extent you can opine on the difference of WMATA as a public institution and, in fact, our being directors serving, in some cases, two masters, but being aligned with the same purpose. Obviously, the health of this corporation is within the interests of everyone who serves another master. So I'm wondering to what extent you make a qualitative distinction regardless of how different it is than what you see elsewhere.
Yeah, and thank you for that, sir. What I would say is this. The concept of officially obligating you as a fiduciary to serve two roles is unique in Anglo-American jurisprudence. Since Blackstone and the King began granting tariffs and commissions, the Board of Admiralty had an obligation to the board, even though the ships were owned perhaps by Dutch masters and others. So it's a unique concept. That being said, you know, your stakeholders include the jurisdictions, your ridership, your advisory council, people who are disabled, school children, so on and so forth. You have a very broad universe of stakeholders in the operations of WMATA. So what I would say in that regard is that fiduciary obligation from a legal standard is an aberration, but there is nothing that limits you to have, in fact, the bylaws and the compact require both the chairman and members of the board to participate in communications. So I'm not saying you don't have voice from the stakeholders in the jurisdictions, and they don't have impact. Jurisdictional advisory committee has, by definition, has impact. It's just that I'm really talking about you. I'm as strategic advisor to WMATA, I'm concerned about you. And so I'm making my recommendation not so much about what the jurisdictions will have in terms of communication. That is natural and normal, and you have a structure in place to provide that. What I'm saying is charging you with competing fiduciary duties seems to me to be somewhat aberrational and puts you in a unique position.
You're a reputed lawyer. I don't want to litigate the issue with you right now, but on one hand, what I'm struggling with is just understanding, practically speaking, how that dueling fiduciary responsibility would actually manifest in a real conflict, because I can't imagine having a duty to WMATA that would be inconsistent ultimately with my role as a jurisdiction. It's my job to make sure that this organization is healthy, efficient, operating in a sound way, not just necessarily that I minimize a jurisdictional contribution to the agency. So that's just something that I think we are going to have to grapple with as we move forward, your sensible recommendation versus the practical reality that we all live under.
Let me try to answer that by using a hypothetical. In a mill town, the fiduciary duty of the business is to the shareholders. You would say you have a broader civic fiduciary duty to the employees, to the country store, to the, if you use Keynesian economics, the multiplier, 4-to-1. Very few board obligations say you can't choose to consolidate or use another supplier, which is in the best interest of the corporation, because that might impact your stakeholders that are in the community. So the fiduciary duty flows to the best interest of the organization to make it efficient, to make it run rise, and that's all I'm saying in this context. There could be imaginary issues that could arise, so I don't want to speculate or use hypotheticals here, but I'm trying just to use that as an analogy of where other fiduciaries, their obligations are clear.
To be continued, I'm sure. Thanks.
I'd love to.
Mr. Augustine. Augustine, please.
First of all, thank you very much, Mr. Orr and the team for this review. And obviously, I agree with everyone that it's important for us to streamline this and make this as efficient as possible. When I actually, though, look in specific to one of the recommendations, I do have a concern, and that's in Section 3, and it's under 11, which is the composition of the committees.
Yeah, Mr. Augustine, that's of the bylaws?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the bylaws. Oh, gosh, this is 32 for us. It's the recommendation here is that each committee shall have at least 4 members and may have as many as 8 members. As we are currently structured, our finance committee has, I think, 15 members right now. And I just would share with you that particularly I know for, we, as you know, it's very complicated as far as how we are brought to this board in the very varying jurisdictions that we represent. Particularly in Virginia, you would find that perhaps someone from Arlington or Alexandria or Fairfax would not be on the finance board. And I would have trouble with that. I have trouble with that myself, representing Prince George's County as the director who is appointed by Prince George's County directly, the county executive and the county council, versus obviously my colleagues who are appointed by the state and by Montgomery County. And so I'm not sure if, or rather, I know that I would not support that. I mean, I would be very concerned about that. I'm not sure if the committee thought about that, was aware of that. I would hope that we could change that. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Augustine. Thank you, sir.
Kevin, would you share, and also Patty, will you share with the board in terms of when you did your due diligence, in terms of looking for procedures and things that have been approved by the board, in terms of from the board office versus the general counsel's office?
Yes.
Yeah, I think the board needs to know that in terms of how how far off we were and how things were hidden throughout the organization. It's not reflected upon the board office, but it just shows you how dysfunctional things were.
Well, I'd say this, you know, we in our effort to do our due diligence, we looked at prior governance efforts and reviewed the compact, the April 2016 bylaws, the board procedures of April 2016, and I believe a total of 49 board resolutions and 11 delegations of authority, which with the help of the board secretary's office, we were fortunate to retrieve. But a lot of your constitutional governance structure is here. But operationally, a lot of the governance had been disposed of through resolutions and procedures. This is an effort to set a milestone, to take all of those documents and delegations and put them into one seminal document, meaning your bylaws, so that you do not necessarily have to cycle through the various resolutions to understand where the authority and the governance structures lies. To be quite frankly, it would impose quite a burden on board members and others to try to understand exactly what your authority is without reading through compact bylaws and 49 resolutions and 11 delegations. I would hazard to say I made a list before our prior discussions, and I'm not going to belabor you with it, but it went from A to double W in terms of the number of resolutions that we had to go through.
Pat, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I agree with, I do agree with the recommendations of Mr. Orr in a very concise 8-page document. You know, a new board member, an existing board member can very clearly just read the 8 pages and know exactly what his or her duties and responsibilities are, and also as to who the officers are of the authority. So I think it's a very, very good document. In my experience as a member of various private boards and also legal advisor to the board, I think this document would help improve the effectiveness of the board and also remain consistent with the public purpose of WMATA and its board.
Thank you. Okay. Who wants to go first?
Well, I guess
your choice. No, I'm going to give it up. I'm going to leave it up to you guys. Go ahead.
I think for our
committee. And Jess, was I saying that? I'm in the private sector. I'm not formal. Go ahead, Paul, Tony.
For our committee, as we deliberate on this further, not today. You know, I think the issue of fiduciary responsibility and serving two masters is something we need to actually hit head on. I think there's a real difference between codification and behavior. When I look at what's codified, I actually don't see that much of a conflict, but I might be misreading it, and I'm sure I'll be reading it again and again and again. But as we deliberate as a committee and as a board, I think we need to understand really what we're talking about, because again, sure, codification is different than behavior. So I'll just throw that on the table.
Mr. Goldman, please.
Thank you. These issues of fiduciary responsibility and ethical issues have been revisited by the board frequently over the past number of years. In fact, most recently, two and a half years ago. They come at a time before a number of, I feel like one of the old senior members here.
You are.
You are a senior member.
I don't want you to say that. But anyway, before many of you were here, and fairly contentious discussions of these issues of fiduciary duties, fiduciary responsibility, ethics, I would encourage you as chair of this committee and the governance committee to, at an early stage, have a work session with the attorney generals of the district, Maryland, and Virginia, and get their input so that their views are taken into account. Because
sure,
I think there's a number of positions in the current bylaws and in the current code of ethics, which surprisingly, the attorney generals reached agreement on what they wanted to see in there and what they viewed as the responsibilities of the states in terms of both fiduciary duties as well as ethical standards. They have a very high interest, I learned at that point, in making sure that the ethical standards for board members aligned with what they viewed to be ethical standards for appointees from the district or appointees from Maryland or appointees from Virginia. So in order to avoid a lot of conflict and controversy in a broader committee or board discussion, I would encourage you at an early stage to have a work session with the attorney generals from the three state jurisdictions.
Well,
give you some insight into,
sure.
Just to give you some insight, the compact, as well as our bylaws, describes WMATA as an instrumentality of each of the states. The states take that very seriously. Their philosophical legal view is that they each could have created a transit authority to carry out certain public transport functions, but they decided to vest those state responsibilities in WMATA. But they still consider that WMATA is carrying out state responsibilities and functioning as an instrumentality of the district, instrumentality of Maryland, instrumentality of the Commonwealth of Virginia. And since they're footing the bill each year for half of the operating deficit for this organization, you know, something in the range of $800 to $900 million and perhaps more as we look to FY18, putting my hat on as finance chair for a minute, they have both a political, legal, as well as a fairly strong economic interest in how these provisions are drafted and adopted by the board. So I encourage you to consult with them.
Thank you for your comments, and that is our intention. We now have a general counsel that, in fact, is quite effective, and she will convene a meeting of those individuals to review these bylaws and as well the ethics policy. Please.
I just wanted to echo Mr. Goldman's point, but I think it will, the opportunity for us to truly have a discussion about this in some sort of a work environment other than a committee meeting as that structure, because I think it will go further than he goes in terms, because I think that that, as Mr. Dorsey was alluding to, goes further. We come here from a different entity. And so that understanding how that fiduciary responsibility transcends to the actions that we do here, I think are still conceived and still seen as the Commonwealth, but it is the Commonwealth through a lens of another organization. And I think that's very important that we all understand each of these models and be able to have that discussion under Mr. Orr's recommendation and understand whether or not that recommendation is not only unique but might be necessary in order for the organization to be able to have all of the fiduciary needs that, that it requires to operate.
Are there any other questions, Leif? Okay, anyone else? May I have a motion to adjourn? Second? Okay. Hereby adjourned. Thanks, Kevin.